Afternoon, we'll call the House Committee on Veterans Services and Emergency Preparedness to order. I appreciate you being here. Today is Thursday, April 4th. We have quite an agenda with a couple of bills that are, you know, very much of interest to this committee. And we're excited to have folks here to testify by long list and even have a celebrity or two in our audience. So thank you so much for being here. So without further ado, what we're going to do is we will open up the hearing for the House bill and the resolution together. I think that folks are here to testify either on one or both bills. Since they both deal with the lottery, I'm sure your comments will be germane. We will, at this point, open up a public hearing on House Bill 2086 and H.J.R. 29. Ms. Edwards?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2086 has subsequent referral to Ways and Means and was heard by this committee first on February 21st. It would establish one or more veteran-themed lottery games dedicated to veterans education and economic development. It would create a veterans lottery fund, separate and distinct from the general fund, that would be appropriated to the Department of Veteran Affairs continuously. The Oregon State Lottery Commission would record and account for all the costs and net proceeds from the veteran-themed lottery fund, and those would end up in the Veterans Lottery Fund and the ODVA. House Joint Resolution 29 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution designating 5% of the net proceeds from the state lottery to be spent on veteran services, including but not limited to assistance with reintegration, employment, education benefits and tuition, housing, health care, access to state and federal benefits, and services provided by county and campus veteran service officers.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And joining us today, we have Representative Julie Parrish, our Vice Chair, and thank you. And also former Senator and, again, County Commissioner for Clackamas County, Martha Schrader. Thank you both for being here, and I know that you would like to kick this off, and so it's yours. So thank you.
I'm going to defer to my colleague on that.
And then welcome.
Oh, thank you, Chair Matthews and members of the committee. It's delightful to be back down here in a different capacity, particularly for both of these bills. Obviously, I support both, but I am in particular going to speak to H.J.R. 29 because my dear colleague Representative Parrish has been working very, very hard on it, and as a military spouse, she knows whereof she speaks because of her experiences. And for the record, my name is Martha Schrader, Clackamas County Commissioner, and thank you again for this opportunity to support H.J.R. 29. If passed into law by hopefully this body, proceeds would be used to fund services that are essential to reintegrating soldiers into civilian life, such as employment and education programs, health care, including mental health and housing for homeless veterans. Roughly 375,000 living Oregonians have set aside their personal aspirations and safety to serve their country in times of war. Many of these service members face serious challenges readjusting to civilian life after their return home, and these challenges, as you all know, are significant. Unemployment rates are high. Multiple deployments for our soldiers have really caused physical and mental health problems. Traumatic brain injury is on the rise, post-traumatic stress disorder, and a number of other issues. They're going to need services when they return from these deployments. Veterans also are more likely than other groups to experience homelessness. I know that our county, for the first time, is not only just doing a homeless count, but really doing a significant job trying to identify who among the homeless are veterans. The number of homeless veterans in Clackamas County, for example, rose from 74 in 2009 to 120 in 2011, and that is a 62% increase in 2 years, and quite frankly, I think those numbers are low. I suspect there are a lot more homeless veterans out there that have not yet been identified for these factors. I think that veterans and their families, particularly their spouses and children, have sometimes difficulty having a one-stop, being able to navigate the services that are available to them. And of course, what we have in our county, as well as other colleagues in other counties, is we have a very strong veteran services officers program Indeed, within the last 2 years, we added an additional VSO to our continuum of care that we provide for our veterans. And they really increase our capacity to serve the veterans and really act as the one-stop shop for claims. And it also reduces turnaround time for them. So these dollars that this bill would supply to these kinds of services are going to be critical, and I'm going to tell you why, and I'm sure you all know this already. Because the 41st Brigade is going to be deployed, I believe Representative Parrish, in 2014, if I'm not correct, they're doing cleanup in Afghanistan. Okay, this is probably the most dangerous deployment that these individuals will face. And we need to be prepared for when they come home. And some of them, we all know already, will not come home. So we need to be ready to not only serve the veterans, but their families and their spouses in any way that we can. And lastly, let me say, even though, you know, I talk about the 41st Brigade, remember, the Vietnam War was my era. And I know that we have a number of Vietnam veterans here today, and they are here because they believe that our troops need to be welcomed home in a way where they are respected, where they feel embraced by their community, and where we as their as citizens and friends of theirs help them in any way we can. So thank you. Strong support for both bills, and let's make it happen, folks.
Thank you very much, and rest assured, we have at least one Vietnam veteran on this committee every time we meet, and that would be the good Representative Sal Esquivel. So thank you so much for your comments, and we will save our questions for the panel until Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So, colleagues, for the record, House District 37, Julie Parrish, State Rep. You know, I guess I have to start this conversation by saying I probably, much as my remonstrances might show otherwise, I was probably the least likely person to be a veterans advocate. I was chasing the Army before I could go to a bar. I met my husband when I was 20, and I've been following the Army ever since. And reluctantly, I was not happy with 1 week in a month and 2 weeks a year, and since he was AGR, it was all day, every day, plus the weekends, plus the AT, and so there was a point even when I asked my husband to get out of the service because I'm tired of us being in the military, and we had to work through that in our marriage. And so I was probably somebody who would not consider myself at the time an advocate because I actually wanted my husband to get out of the military when I was younger. I thought we were kept getting bounced around the state, and I couldn't get settled into a job. It was really difficult, and I remember the first time that I really gave thought to what was going on with veterans, and there was I don't remember if it was Newsweek or Time, but one of the magazines, you know, kind of our weekly magazines, show up, and there's a veteran on the cover with a child who was born with no arms, and that child was a child who, the veteran was a member of, service member from the Gulf War, first Gulf War, and we hadn't decided whether or not we were going to have kids yet, and I saw that, and I was horrified. Just horrified. And I had to really consider whether I wanted to have children with somebody who could produce a child that was going to come out with no arms. And I think that was the first time that I kind of, the light went on that we have a problem with veterans and with their and the problems related to their service. And we ended up having three children that, knock wood, have been very healthy. And even through that, first baby gets here and things are okay, still want my husband to be out. And I can remember being pregnant with our second child and about halfway through that pregnancy, and we get the news that Mark is really sick. Like, we did not know what was going on with him sick. And the oncologist basically feels like his time in the Gulf contributed to this mysterious illness that we actually never solved, presenting like cancer. And within a few days of having a baby, they had to go in and take out everything, every organ that wasn't nailed down, spleen and his gallbladder and his appendix and a chunk of his liver. And we just, nobody ever figured out what was wrong with them. Taking all that, all the parts out seemed to help. But, you know, we watch after that. But right at that same window, the phone rings. And it's my sister. Most of you know my sister passed 2 years ago. My sister calls. And it's early, 6-something in the morning. And she says, and we're basically going to have a baby in about 5 days, 6 days. She says, get up and turn on your television. And I get up and I turn on my TV, and the first tower had fallen on 9/11. And Mark, getting ready to go have surgery, we planning to have this baby early so that he could go have surgery because he's sick, doesn't even hesitate, goes straight to the telephone, calls into the Army and says, what do I need to do? And that's what our soldiers do in the face of illness, in the face of personal family issues and drama and things that are going on in their family. They get up and they're soldiers first. And in post 9/11, as we have sent deployment after deployment after deployment out of Oregon, my involvement and engagement with these issues has grown with every single deployment, from being a family support coordinator, unfunded. We don't fund our family support programs in this state. We rely kind of on volunteers, and we can't even ask for money. We're not technically allowed to ask for donations. And yet we ask to fund families and soldiers in this capacity. And then Mark deployed, and boy, I was really glad when he got out of the Army. And when he got out of the Army, that deployment, you heard me say today on the floor, 50% of those guys came home to no jobs. And right at that same window, an opportunity to run for this seat came up. And if that was not a motivating factor for me to be here, I don't know what was, but it was definitely got me out knocking on doors to come to this building. So I am definitely in the unlikely advocate camp, but this has really evolved over the last 17 years. And so when I get here, I am thrilled to serve with the people who are up on this dais right now, because your hearts are deep for these issues, and I know it because we passed bills out of here in the last session. And I want to just remind you of a few of those bills. These are bills that we passed out of our committee last session that went to some other committee and died for lack of funding. House Bill 3248, we've reintroduced it. We passed it on to another committee again. This is the Internet Tax Credit Bill. House Bill 2402, Campus Veteran Service Officers Program. House Bill 2404, a tax credit for mental health services to veterans. House Bill 2406, dealing with a toll-free line to victims of military sexual trauma. House Bill 2407 directs the Department of Veterans Affairs to implement programs designed to encourage women who are veterans to take advantage of their health care benefits. House Bill 2638, money for the Oregon Coast Military Heritage Museum, so we remember where we came from. House Bill 3205 creates an Oregon Veterans Business Enterprise Program. House Bill 3206 increases a tax credit for health care providers who provide services under TRICARE contracts. House Bill 3335 directs the Parks and Rec, authorizes State Parks and Rec to establish reductions and waivers and exemptions and fees from charges imposed on areas established and maintained by Parks and Recs for armed service members who want to come and enjoy those facilities. House Bill 3644 requires that law enforcement units are trained to in safety issues dealing with veterans as they are encountering veterans, if you recall that bill, where we're asking our police force to at least have a way to identify and acknowledge that someone that they are pulling over might be a veteran or are encountering might be a veteran. Senate Bill 280 appropriates money to the Department of Veterans Affairs for assisting veterans who use wheelchairs with medical transportation. Colleagues, those bills, in sum, represent a minimum of $4 million. Some of these we hadn't even had a fiscal determined. So there's a real need. We identified that need. This body out of our committee passed and heard that need, and then our colleagues did not address it in other committees. And I've been told that we prioritize our spending, and we have a lot of other priorities. But it is shameful when I see that some of those priorities are $10 million wind farm credits to some developer who gets to have three of them because he split his property the right way, and he gets $30 million, and we couldn't move $4 million out of this building. And I was also surprised as a new legislator to, you know, that I would have thought policy dictates how we spend money. But what I've learned is that ways and means dictates how we spend money. So if that's how it works, then I'm going to go get us the money, and then this committee can identify policy that permanently serves our veterans in a capacity that takes care of them for years to come. I'll go get us the money. And that's what these bills are about. If that's how it's done, that we have to make sure that there's funds for this so that then we can have good policy ideas, then these bills are about making sure that that money is permanently in place so that those of us who serve on this committee, who know what needs to be done as veterans, as veteran advocates, as spouses, who know what need to be done to serve this population, this is about making those pools of money exist so that the power of this committee is that when we send policy down to Ways and Means that no needs to be served, there's going to be money there to serve it. And for me, colleagues, I'll just be blunt. This is a hell or high water issue for me. I am blessed to have Martha Schrader here as my friend. She and I, 2 years ago, about this month, joined together as the co-chairs for the Oregon, or for the Military Child Education Coalition, and leading up Oregon's efforts to help identify the needs and help create in our communities awareness for Oregon's 11,000 service-connected children. And the funny thing was, in that process, is both of us at the party level of our political parties got beat up pretty good for joining forces on this. I was told by rumors of swirling around Clackamas County that I was going to become a Democrat, and I was fundraising for Martha Schrader, and she got beat up over the head as well. And I'll tell you what, this is a woman that I will stand with shoulder to shoulder and go door to door and whatever it needs to do to get her back as a Clackamas County Commissioner, because I know that she has the heart for these issues. She cares about them deeply, and our veterans should not be partisan political issues for any of us. So HJR 29 is an effort between she and I to make this happen, where we have a pool of money and we have strength in this committee. We've seen where this committee, you know, we come here and the room is empty and everybody's out in healthcare and all the other places where the big checks are being written in this building and nobody's sitting in Veterans Affairs. We want to make sure that this room is packed for the next 40 years because we have some dollars there available. And so when I say this is a hell or high water, I'm not taking a chance that this body doesn't do the right thing. I know you all want to do the right thing. Your names are on this bill. Every single one of us to a member is from this committee is signed on to this. But we are gathering signatures. There is a parallel effort to make this happen at the ballot box one way or the other. I have pulled on this in my own House district without having ever even heard the concept. 65% of people in my House district were right in the yes position on doing this. So, colleagues, it's the right thing to do. Our state knows it's the right thing to do. We don't have a base community for folks to pull from and have these resources. We rely on people like Commissioner Schrader and folks in Clackamas County and all the counties we represent to be doing this work, but they can't do it alone and they can't do it with no money. And so I'm going to urge us to shepherd this bill, HJR 29. Of course, I love the other one, too. I'm not going to be picky. I'll take them both. But I'm going to urge us to shepherd these bills through the process and let the voters of Oregon decide if they want their money spent on wind farms or if they want to spend their money on veterans. And I'm willing to bet every day of the week that they are going to choose the veterans who've served our state and our nation honorably and who need our help. It's one thing to say we're going to have a Veterans Day off. We have veterans who are unemployed who aren't going to take benefit of that. And, you know, Representative Huffman popped in my head this morning. I was driving down here. It's great that we're naming a highway, you know, on Highway 84 for Vietnam veterans, but that's not where I want them living, is out on the side of the highway. I want us to have, you know, just because that's their highway. I want them to have housing. I want them to have health care, and I want them to have all the programs and services they need to successfully be in our community and to live a healthy, prosperous life. We heard about the Atomic veterans today and the issues that they had and the fact that they couldn't receive help. We hear this all the time in this committee, and I could go on and on, and it probably would, but I know that Senator Olson needs to get to where he needs to go too, so I will stop there and urge our support, and I'm looking forward to all the testimony of people who are here to support this as well today. Thank you.
Thank you for that, and I also want to recognize and be respectful of your timeline. I understand you may have to be leaving as well.
I do have to head out, and that may... You'll do a great job, Senator.
And I just, before you do, and Senator Olson, forgive me, I just want to say thanks for your service to the state and your community. You're wonderful. I was proud to serve with the Reintegration Task Force with you. You were always there for our veterans, and thank you very much. And really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule as a commissioner to come down on this issue. Thank you.
Well, this is an issue near and dear to my heart. And Julie's the firebrand of the two of us. Between the two of us, I have the softer touch. You've got the firebrand touch, and we will really work to make sure that our veterans get what they need.
And we look forward to hearing more.
And Senator Olson is a veteran as well. I know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Olson, welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Parrish, members of the committee, my name is Senator Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, the heart of Clackamas County. That was, in fact, the seat that the Honorable Martha Schrader held. I'm here to support HDR 29 because I was told to. We had a wonderful hearing today. A bill signing on Senate Bill 1, and Julie said, you will be there to support HDR 29. You know I have a soft spot in my heart for veterans. I am a veteran, and this is a good, appropriate thing to do for veterans. Anything we can do for our troops is appropriate and good, and we remember from long years past when we had some wars that we weren't so well looked on, and it's still... That pang is still there, and I would hope that you would, in fact, support this bill and move it forward as it should be when it comes to my side and comes to my committee. I certainly will be there to support it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your service as well. Does anybody have any questions for this panel before we move forward? And, of course, the representative will be joining us, and the senator will be moving on. Any questions from the panel? Thank you so much again.
I would like to add that I'm going back to testify on a Senate bill to allow veterans to have in-state tuition. So
Senate Bill 820, right, I believe, right?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Matthews, I just want to get a couple technical things out of the way about HDR 29. A permanent dedication of 5% funds does not affect other people's permanent dedication of funds. So the money we give to Parks and Rec and Fish, not affected by this. The money that we give and allocate to education, not affected. Where the impact is going to be in the discretionary portion of the lottery dollars that's available that we use for bonding and for other things. So the lottery also, we've heard in other hearings around lottery issues, there's been a lot of conversation about lottery, grows historically at a clip of 4%. I've also got a bill in another committee to ask the lottery to really think about how it spends its advertising dollars. I believe that there's some opportunity for the lottery to sharpen its pencil there and save some money and to put those dollars elsewhere. And so what we're really looking for is for, you know, better management of the advertising and then the growth piece of the lottery so that other people are who have allocations dedicated out of the lottery are at their current service, remain at their current service levels so that we can get this accomplished. So just so you're aware of that. I'll also make the committee aware that the treasurer has asked if we would consider making an amendment to this bill so that there's an opportunity for the treasurer's office to clean up some other language in the Constitution that has around lottery that has nothing to do with this. I'm absolutely open and amenable to giving him an opportunity at the ballot to clean up an issue he's got with the language of the lottery bill that affects how he does bonding and the capacity to pay back bonds long term. So if we so choose to move some amendment language from the treasurer's office, I will happily accept that. I will say that the signature gathering piece does not allow for us to take the treasurer's language and wrap that back in. If we go that path, this does give us the opportunity to fix, do the treasurer's fix that that they suggested to us yesterday. And so with that, I will hop back up and we can hear from other folks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. You know, I'm sorry, before you leave, I think I will just ask you one question because I think you're the best to answer. So with the 5% number, how did you arrive to 5% in terms of the effort?
Well, it's less than we give Fish, so that's always, you know, we're asking for less than Parks and Rec and Fish. It's a small percentage. And really, a lot of it was kind of based on the need that I've heard. We've heard in this committee, I just rattled off, you know, almost $5 million worth of need just from one session. The opportunity for us to leverage these dollars, and I'm not an expert in the federal match opportunity, but there is an opportunity for us to, if we have some dedicated programs to be able to reach up and match down some federal dollars around housing and some of the health care. And long-term planning. I mean, what are the capital projects that we might need to do as we look at veterans' homes and housing and to be able to get those dollars used? I think the asks that people come to the legislature here and make are actually significantly less than they could make because they get told no, so they don't come back. And I think the need is actually higher, so we wanted to make sure we had a dollar amount that was high enough in there to make that happen. I think if we were to put together a full-fledged full-fledged laundry list of trying to keep suicide lines on and $75,000 checks to Seeing Eye Dog projects. And, you know, and if people actually could come to the legislature, I think not only could we consume the 5%, we could probably consume a whole lot more than that. I just think people are tired of asking because they get told no.
And the dollars on 5%, how much is that?
$26 million a year out of $1.1 billion of annual net proceeds of the lottery.
So $52 million in the biennium.
$52 million in the biennium.
Thank you.
Okay.
And with that, I think it might be appropriate before we call everybody up. I'll call Larry Nisswender from the Lottery Commission, if you would. Thank you, sir, for coming forward. And I think you're going to talk a little bit about the Dash 1. And again, if you're just joining us, we opened up public hearings on both, so they're simultaneous. If you're here to talk about the raffle, that would be fine. And if you're here to talk about the lottery appropriation, again, that is welcome. And we have some written testimony, too. And I would only ask, if you're submitting written testimony, that you just don't read it to us. You just kind of summarize. We have a lot of folks signed up. Love to hear from everybody today, but we are on a time schedule. So thank you, sir, for being here. And identify yourself. And
Chair Matthews and committee members, for the record, Larry Nisswender, Director of the Oregon Lottery. I will just keep my testimony brief for you today. I did want to confirm Representative Parrish's testimony. The 1% dedication per biennium would be roughly $10 million. That's what 1% goes to Problem Gambling Treatment Fund through that 1% dedication. So 5% biennially would be about five times that amount, which is what she testified to.
Thank you, sir.
And then just briefly on House Bill 2086, I just saw that there's some amendments that may be introduced, and I don't want to speak too specifically to them because I haven't seen them introduced yet, but I just wanted to, on the record, say that I'd love to work with you and your staff to make some minor changes to those before you work session it and send it out. I think it will make it workable. I know the goal here is to produce approximately $1.2 million per raffle for veteran services, and I just want to do what I can do to help make this streamline that so that we put it on a pathway where the bottom line is the revenues produced based on the games, with some flexibility for lottery to manage the raffle product and the timing of the sale.
Thank you, sir. And that was based on, and I sure appreciate your involvement in the committees when we have these discussions. We kind of the pulse of the committee was that we wanted to kind of focus on raffle instead of scratch or any other game, simply because the raffle really isn't one of the Gamblers Anonymous type links. It's more of a, it's not necessarily compulsion. It's more compelled for the argument of let's support our vets. And so we're trying to do that, and you'll notice that, and I think what you're looking for is maybe not an absolute certainty on Veterans Day, but may include Veterans Day, because I think your desire is the same as ours, which would be let's have a game that actually that you know gets proceeds that we can count on, and we sell the game out, and we do as much for the veterans as we can. So
yes.
I know that Ms. Edwards would be happy to work with you, and we appreciate your insight on that issue, and I know you've kind of scratched off a little on the Dash 1 already. Not a scratch a ticket, but appreciate that. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Nisswender? None?
Okay.
Thank you very much again, and thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate that. And with that, and if you're new, also keep in mind that the Senate and the House got together and decided what would be the most effective way to run our committees. Let's do them simultaneous at the same time so people couldn't testify on both. We didn't do that intentionally. It just happens. And so with that, I see that General Caldwell's not back. So I will hold off on calling him up, and I'll also hold off on calling up our director from ODVA. And we'll just start with the panel of, I think it's, is it Bell Landon? Landau? Bell Landau?
Yeah.
Tina Olson and Greg Siever. And when you called up as a panel, just remember to speak into the microphones. We just need your name. We don't need your address or any of that. If you are a veteran, we'd love to hear where you served, which branch. And even if you're not Army, we are still very interested.
That's right.
It's a positive if you aren't Army.
with that, thank you so much for being here. And in whatever order you'd like is fine by us.
Okay. My name is Belle Landau. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit in Oregon called the Returning Veterans Project. We ask licensed and insured mental health providers, as well as acupuncturists, chiropractors, massage therapists, to volunteer for us by opening a free slot in their practice for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, National Guard members, reservists, active duty service members, and their families. Last year, our project alone delivered 3,090 hours of free care to 288 OIF/OEF veterans, guard members, active duty service members, and 165 military spouses, children, parents, and other relatives that were deeply affected by their veterans' military service. I see the need for these funds every day, so I'm in full support of both of these measures, and it would provide great support to people in our communities who are hurting, who come home and have needs that aren't being met. I am the mother also of an Iraq War veteran, as well as the executive director of this project. So this is a deeply important issue to me. Every day I get phone calls from people that need help and they're not getting it. So in addition to providing services, we're able to refer people to other organizations that are still in existence in Oregon but are in danger of going away. So I hope that you will support both of these measures for lottery funds. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your work with the veterans. And yeah, if you'll just stay seated until we get through the panel, and then we'll have questions. Thank you.
My name is Tina Olson. I'm a veteran advocate through the state. And I just want to thank and foremost thank you, every single one of you guys, for doing the work that you guys do, because it's so vital and important, as my work is sometimes to me, because I have a lot of passion for what I do. But the reason I have the passion in what I do is because I'm a veteran of Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Kuwait, and Mogadishu. But I also survived the MST, which I got pregnant out of the MST. The Army forced me to have an abortion over in Korea. That was my first tour. And then through the all the deployments that I've had, I've got PTSD. I have been institutionalized for my PTSD before. I don't like talking about this very much, because the point of the fact of it is that's why where I get my passion at, is because I see Vietnam vets on a daily basis. In fact, Jack Brigette, I'll be speaking with him. He's a Vietnam vet down in Gold Coast. Everybody read about him, where the VA had owed him $63,000, and he got fully compensated, and now he's in remission from his stage 4 cancer of Agent Orange. I'm also here for veterans that could not make it down here, which is between 25 and 30 veterans that I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis, like Michael Sorensen, was suicide veteran. I'm dealing with Matthew Brennan's parents that committed suicide 2 years ago. I have several ones. This friend of mine, Greg, I've also helped him when he was going to school. But on top of everything else, why this is so... I got passion for this bill is because I am so tired of getting up every day. I don't take a dime for my work, but there is no programs out there. Oregon Hire Vets just ended. The reintegration team has very little money. We only have Army Strong in Clackamas County, and they're very limited on the DOD funds that they have. They have enough to last for another year. We have no programs. And the other part of it is VSOs are so vital, because these people are our lifelines. And that's why I support both of the bills, because a VSO saved me, you know. And a lot of people, like Vietnam vets, don't even know about veteran service officers. And it tears me up sometimes that I go talk to the suicidal veterans versus, you know, the ones that can't even get compensated, the ones that don't even know how they get compensated. And I'm just a facilitator that tells them where to go and how to do it. That's all I do on a day-to-day basis, and I collect resources. But these other people need to know that there's other veterans in their district that are hurting, that are not even being acknowledged, because I've been watching these bills go through the House, and it just upsets me when they're more worried about tuition equity than veterans. I don't get this. What I get is that our government sends us to fight, but it's like, who's going to take care of us? Who's going to put us back together? I don't understand this. I don't. And each one of you don't even understand at this point that these veterans are hurting. Hurting. I watched the ones yesterday with the marijuana measure. It's upsetting that a person has to smoke pot because he wants to be off the drugs. Because our VA basically chucks it down our throat. And I've been through that. I was on 15 pills. I wasn't smart enough to get out of the VA system, and went and seeked proper doctor, and he got me off of it. But it's like, and I've did a lot of counseling to get where I am today. But it's like, you guys, I mean, some of these people need to realize that these veterans are hurting. And I'll tell you, the worst person you want on your doorstep at this point is dealing with a PTSD veteran, and he ain't got nowhere to go because, you know, he's lost, and they're sick of the VA, and he's homeless, and, you know, he left his family because he can't feed him. I deal with a lot of those. I deal with some National Guardsmen that want to hop from plane to plane to go back over to deployment because he ain't got nowhere to go. No job. But, you know, he figures that it's better off to go in deployments because he's worth more dead than he is alive. I've had that come out of veterans' mouths. So what I'm urging today, and everybody in this house, and if they're watching, please, I urge this. It makes my life a lot easier to sit there and pass this, both of these, because they are so very vital to our existence. They are. And that's, I just want to thank every single one of you for listening to all this testimony and appreciate everything.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you for your service. And again, thank you for the courage that you always display in sharing your story. I appreciate that very much. You. Sir?
Yeah, my name is Greg Seaver. I'm only here because Tina rattled my cage. I happen to be a member of, luckily, become a member of In-Country Vietnam Motorcycle Club. And I say luckily because there aren't many places that old guys who have the same mindset can get together and hang out. And, you know, we don't really swap war stories. That's not what we're about. We're about realizing that we've all gone through a traumatic experience, as all veterans have that have been to war. And we are a nonprofit, and it's beneficial for us to get together just to be around like-minded individuals. We don't particularly, you know, we BS a lot about different stuff, and, you know, the fish gets bigger every time, you know. But that's not our issue. Our issue is primarily to help veterans. We're a 501c3, I'm not real adept at this. And as such, we have supported Ward 5C up at the VA hospital. We donate clothing and other things to the veteran homeless community downtown Portland. They've got an office down there. And we also support the mental health ward out on 122nd. Now, all of our monies that we generate go to these aspects. We don't, you know, none of the money is taken home. We don't go out and have wild parties, unfortunately. But no, all the money seriously goes to back to the veteran community, and that's what we're here about. As a possible beneficiary of anything that's going to help a 501c3 organization, this is of importance to us. And let me go a step back a bit. Tina and I, as she had said, had met at school. Now, I have retired. I spent my 4.5 in, and then I spent the remaining time in because I couldn't break the connection with the military. I spent 5 years in the Guard, and then I spent another 20-some-odd in the Reserve. That bond gets to be overly powerful at times. And the returning vets that I've seen at school have all been struggling with the same issues and more issues than what we have had to deal with coming back from Vietnam. As a result of that, something that would help the veteran committee or the community in general, particularly with VSOs, mental health, the families of Vietnam veterans, it's just scary. I've been in school now for 3 years, and it's scary to see young men come back who are still suffering the same things that we as Vietnam veterans came back and faced. Luckily, today, they're more welcome, and that's not the point I'm making, but they still have the same issues. It breaks up families. It tears people apart, and often, even today, with all the amenities available, these guys fall through the cracks. And part of that is because they get told no, as was spoken earlier, a lot, and they just finally turn their back and walk away. I mean, there's guys hiding in the hills from the current stuff. There's guys hiding in the hills from the old stuff. War is not a good thing, but beyond that, the issues that are present in all of the veterans' lives can be affected by more more possibilities of getting mental health, help for the families, and in our case, just help for any nonprofit organization dealing with veterans.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many Vietnam veterans do we have in the audience here? Hey, would you please stand up, please? We know that when we were in Vietnam, it was a situation of where we didn't fully understand what was going on because they were protesting us at home. We were in the battlefield. We weren't supported properly. We didn't feel. And we didn't trust our government. But from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to welcome you home.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Same use, sir.
And welcome home to you as well, Representative. Well done. Class act. Members of the committee, do we have questions for this panel? We have several folks that are here to testify today. We will get through everybody, I assure you. Seeing no questions at this time, thank you so much, and thank you again for your service. Thank you. How about we bring up Cameron Smith and General Mike Caldwell, please?
I didn't get to sit down.
I didn't want you to have to worry about finding the seat, sir.
I'll defer to the director.
Good afternoon. Chair Matthews, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cameron Smith, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And my testimony will largely be directed at HB 2086 here today. But as a starting point, I think it's important to recognize that veterans are not a problem. They are among our greatest assets, our greatest citizens both in times of war and when they come back and serve their community after their military service. But it's not surprising that they do face challenges both for themselves and their families, and largely on healthcare, education, and employment. And as the wars wind down, which is a good thing for Iraq and Afghanistan to be bringing our troops home, we risk attention fading just at the time that we need to be rolling up our sleeves on our veterans' efforts. In HB 2086, you know, I call it the scratch it or the raffle bill. We've introduced it before, and lottery is not always the best way to fund government services. And the governor does not always like lottery as the way that we fund government, but he is supportive of this reintroduction of this bill, House Bill 2086. And last time, it got caught up, I think, in some of the politics around expansion of gaming, around online gaming, and perhaps it was the wording that was still a little too vague that is in this bill in terms of veterans-themed games. The intent has always been for a scratch it or raffle, and the department and the veterans community is supportive of tailoring it to have it, the amendment, to label it specifically as a raffle. And any additional flexibility that the lottery needs to achieve sustainable ongoing revenues is a good thing. The revenue from a raffle, we think, could raise about a little over $1.2 million. And having it as a raffle takes away any concerns in terms of the addiction of video poker or online gaming or expansion of gaming. And ultimately, this is less about gambling and the lottery and tapping into almost a war bond mentality of our citizens that want to support our veterans and our military families. For this first one on the House bill, it still needs to fit the constitutional sniff test of education and economic development. And I think there's a lot of good ideas out there, both that have come out of this committee in terms of how do we create supportive campuses, both through the university system and community colleges, knowing that a lot of our veterans, whether of the Vietnam generation or the newer Iraq-Afghanistan generation, are going back to school and getting further education. So a lot of good opportunity for these dollars to be spent. And then in terms of the larger initiative, generally I'm agnostic on where additional funds come from. If it's the lottery, that's one avenue. If it's general fund, other funds, we know and the committee knows the needs, challenges, opportunities are huge in the veterans community. What kind of dollars we put towards those effort are not always you know, what kind of dollars are not important as long as we get the funds that are critical. And just to emphasize that it's not about the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a tremendous number of partners across the landscape, including the military department with the reintegration team, including the county veteran service offices, our community colleges, universities, nonprofits, and businesses. New funds need to be shepherded wisely, both through this committee, Ways and Means, ideally using the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs for our advice and expertise and connection to the veterans community, but does not certainly have to be spent on our specific programs. So welcome any questions, and I'll hand off to General Caldwell.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Military Department, and we, too, support this bill. I think in the last session when this same idea came up, as Director Smith indicated, we firmly believe, and it's anecdotal, we have no scientific proof, but we think if you have a veterans-themed bill, like a raffle or lottery or something during the, like on Veterans Day, which we did some research 2 years ago and found that Washington does this, and they generated quite a substantial amount of income. I think the estimate now is like $1.2 million or something here in the state of Oregon. They had a low estimate, too, and they actually exceeded that substantially because people saw that who typically don't play the games, but they saw this as a good benefit to veterans, and so they would go in and play the game just in order to help the veterans, with more of that in mind than probably winning the prize, whatever that may be. So I think there's an opportunity there. $1.2 million isn't going to make or break any of these agencies or any of us or what the director and his department does, but it will assist and it will help. And I think that as we look at our soldiers that have come back, and we've spent a good deal of federal money on trying to end reintegration, one of our keys has been education and jobs, which, again, the constitutional test that the director spoke about, I would say getting a person a job after they've been deployed and come home without one or move to another position or leave the job they had, that is the most important piece of it, I think, for reintegration, to get these people productive again and get them back into the workforce. And a lot of other problems go away when they have income. Believe me, we've found that. The other statistic that I'll give you is our last major deployment was the 116th Cavalry out of Eastern Oregon. When those folks, we did a survey on them when they were in Iraq, and they had roughly about 200 and some men and women who were unemployed when they came home. They identified themselves as being unemployed. We were fortunate enough to get some federal money through the good graces of Senator Wyden putting his thumb on the scale back at the federal level, and we really went after the job thing. This is in Eastern Oregon. This is basically from Hood River to Ontario down Interstate 84. A lot tougher job market out there. Within about 6 months, we were down to 12 that didn't have a job because we had the resources to put toward it on those individual, on the eaches. That we estimated that saved almost $9 million in unemployment pay. So if that isn't economic development, I don't know what is. And I think anything we can continue to do that in this bill or the one that's coming up later, and I have some other folks, I think I signed it wrong on the sheet, by the way, Elizabeth, but I guess some other folks.
We've opened up both, sir, so you can, okay. You can speak to both of them.
Okay, well, I'll bring these ladies up that can give you more justification on that, because I think both of these bills actually indicate what we need is really some more resources in there, because at the end of the day, if we can put those resources in there now, we will save the taxpayers a lot of money. We've proven that. We've seen that. Just by pure math. So I think it's worthwhile to look at this as a positive. It's a small amount of money probably, but nevertheless it would help greatly, and I think in reintegration and getting these folks back to work and getting them back into the education environment.
Thank you. And I should say, usually you would have the kind of a third leg of this tripod, Paul Evans, who's been on this issue for quite a while. Unable to be here, he did send an email, and it'll be into the record. He's teaching at Western Oregon University. He says, remind the House Veterans Affairs Committee, I'm supportive of both lottery bills. Anything we can do to provide necessary funds for critical programming needed for our returning and legacy veterans. If I was able, I'd be in the hearing room to voice the message of affirmation as loudly as my voice could carry. As you know, prefers legislation, both pieces, as they were written, but he's keenly aware of challenges ahead. Therefore, please note for the record that I approve a smaller percentage and or targeted fences to avoid unnecessary political challenges. A 2% set aside what he's been advocating for these past few years. We need $10 million over time, and there are many ways to provide that level of support if we all work together. As committee knows, I've been advocating for a set aside of a small portion of the lottery since I departed the governor's office in the letter sent to legislative members in 2011 to 2012. Thank you all members of the committee for keeping the issue alive. Please let me know what I may do to assistance on this or any other matter. So with great respect, Paul Evans, who has been kind of a champion on this issue and approached us several times with you on this issue. And I will say, rather than get hung up on a 5% in this bill or anything less. Today is really a public hearing to talk about the need and what it would do to do something more than we're currently doing now and how we could fund that. And these are vehicles that kind of get us there, one being the raffle itself and the other being a lottery, lottery approval. So with that, I'm going to Representative Parrish.
Thank you.
And then Representative
Parrish. I have a couple questions, and I don't really mind who answers them. The first one would be, do you have a sense of how many nonprofits in Oregon right now are doing the work? Because the bill, HJR 29, specifically has language in there that will allow for nonprofits to come to us. And we had a hearing 2 years ago in Human Services when I served on that committee where we brought nonprofits into the room, and they came and told us pretty amazing stories about how they dig money out from under the couch cushions and do wonderful things with it, although none of them were veterans groups. So they were all the other types of nonprofits, but I know the veterans groups do the exact same thing. So you have a sense of how many folks are doing the work is my first question.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Parrish, I really don't. I would guess it's in the hundreds, though. And the reason I say that is because, as you know, we have a summit every 6 months, what we call our reintegration summit. It started out initially, I remember we were in a fairly small room, and there was 40, 50 people in it. We're getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 to 300 people at these summits every 6 months now. And it's gotten to the point where we're actually doing them regionally because we couldn't really, it didn't have the facilities to get enough work done. To the extent that I have one lady, this is an anecdotal story, and again, I don't think she's nonprofit by any means. Her mother was actually a tour guide here in the Capitol, but she works at Franz Bread. And every Christmas, she goes out with an advertisement to anybody she can to get Fred Meyer cards and, you know, those cards. And she sends them to me to give out. I give them to the chaplain to give to the people that need it. But the point is that there's a ton of people out there that are doing it, not only nonprofit, but just good folks. So to say that there's 100 or more or less, I really don't know, but I do know that they do some very, very good work.
Chair Matthews and Vice Chair Parrish, I mean, there are hundreds of nonprofits, both veterans-specific, like Returning Veterans Project that we heard from, but also members of the Housing Alliance that are in the building today. Central City Concern isn't a veteran-specific nonprofit, but obviously they serve our diverse citizens, and one important leg of that stool is their veterans and military population. So literally hundreds of organizations would be opened up.
General, you might be able to answer this. What are the opportunities, if we had some dedicated dollars from either of these sources, what are the opportunities and kind of where do they exist for us to be able to draw down federal dollars in a match form?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Parrish, right now, our J-9, what we call the J-9, our Reintegration and Family Support Director, is 98% federally funded. There is no match requirement on that 98%. We elect to spend a very small amount of state funds for the director of that operation, and the rest of the monies that run that are from the federal government. Now, the good news story is that as the sequester was rolling out and all of the CRs and everything that was happening at the federal level, the Department of Defense kind of put a King's X on those funds for now. We don't know what that's going to happen. We have fears, but there's really no match required of those dollars presently.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
Somebody bless the follow-up. But outside of reintegration dollars, what about things like housing and mental health and some of the other kind of when? Because I know some of those dollars exist. So do you have a sense of where we can chase the dollars outside of reintegration?
You know, Mr. Chair and Madam Vice Chair, I'm not familiar with any match requirements because most, if not all of our, we have some obvious with our medical sections where we evaluate folks. We don't treat them. They either are treated at a military hospital or hospital or military station or the Veterans Administration. To my knowledge, there's none of that. We don't do the housing piece. We've had offers and assistance from 501c3s, everything from Habitat to Humanity to veterans groups that have done some of that work, and I would suspect that that might be the place that could use some assistance, but I'm not aware of any match dollars that would make the difference here. I really am not. I think the biggest thing is, as you well know, the getting veterans enrolled in the VA is the single most important thing we can do in Oregon, because the more enrollments we get, then we score higher on the federal VA system to get more dollars and resources into Oregon, which is a problem here in Oregon because we know, I think you count 330,000 or so. The estimate is somewhere closer to 550 that we actually have in the state, to the point where, it's another anecdotal story, but my wife's uncle was a Korean War veteran, and I asked him if he's signed up, and he's pushing 80, and he said, no, I got good insurance. I don't need it. I said, well, then help your other veteran because it makes a difference that you're signed up because it makes a count. And he said, I never thought of that, and the next day he went down and signed up. And he's not going to use the service. He doesn't think he needs it, but he helped other people by signing up. And I think that's a bigger task. Now, could this money be used to go out and do that operation? I would think so, and I would think that would be a good investment to help us leverage more federal dollars that could come to Oregon but don't.
And my last follow-up, if that's okay. And county and campus veteran service officers who do that work are specifically listed in HDR 29 for that purpose so that we can tap into those folks. And I know there was some question about other types of service officers and potentially a proposed amendment, and I will just say that the way the bill is written, if there are service officers from other organizations, because we support nonprofits in this bill in the HDR 29, they could come and tap those as well. But my follow-up last question is, if we passed a bill out of this body with 5% and there was $26 million a year, could we spend it all?
You're asking me?
I'm asking you.
Chair Matthews, Vice Chair Parrish, I'll take that for General Caldwell could definitely spend that same amount. But your question goes more to the broader partnerships beyond military department and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And there's no question that the needs are diverse. The challenges and opportunities, whether you're looking at mental or physical health, employment, education, there are ways to target that money for federal matching dollars depending on the area. We're not necessarily expertise in each one of those areas. There are going to be opportunities like that, and like the general said, the federal VA is a $140 billion behemoth. We have about a third of our Oregon veterans signed up for benefits. Getting more of them, their pensions, disability claims, health care benefits, education dollars, that is billions of dollars flowing back into the state of Oregon. Not necessarily that we get our hands on, but that are flowing back into the community across the state, both rural and urban. So it's significant.
And I just
We're really going to have to. We have a lot of folks here that are never in this building. They're veterans that came here to testify today, and I want to hear from them. We have access to these two individuals.
But I just want to thank the director because when we worked on this bill, this was not about making a fiefdom for the Department of Veterans Affairs. So thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you. And Representative Fagan, if you will, and then.
Very quick technical question. I heard you say, I think, that you would support an amendment to 2086 to make it specific to a scratch it.
A raffle.
You would support that. Okay.
So, Chair Matthews, members of the committee, scratch its have sometimes more ups and downs in terms of revenue, and it looks like the raffle would be the most sustainable mechanism.
And I believe there was constituents from the Realtors Association in, and while they were with you, we had the Lottery Commission come up and talk about that.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Do you want me to bring my J9 folks up now?
You know, why don't you, sir? But keep in mind, too, and please understand that we have got to manage this committee to a point of understanding that you're not here every day, and we don't want you to have to come back next session. If you're in the building every day and you can submit written testimony, great. But if you're not, we're going to have to limit your testimony to 3 minutes each. Trust me, we want to say we're doing that with respect so that we can hear from everybody. So we will do that, and we'll be watching the clock. And you'll get a little warning from Ms. Edwards when you're 15 seconds out. As good as we can get. All right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, committee, let me introduce two of our reintegration and family support coordinator folks that do all the hard work in the trenches. And on the far left is Carrie Froelich, who's a family assistance coordinator, and right next to me is Jennifer Kotz, who runs our Yellow Ribbon program. And just a couple of lead-ins, like I said, we're 98% federally funded. We provide critical outreach assistance to not only just Oregon Guard veterans, we take all veterans, any service member or their families. And I think it aligns, their mission aligns directly with these bills. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jennifer, and she can give you a couple facts and then move on.
Hi, for the record, Jennifer Kotz, Yellow Ribbon Program Coordinator. Last year, the J9 found a confirmed 328 jobs for service members. We didn't have a really good reporting system at that time on getting the numbers back. It should be closer to 500, but confirmed 328. 328 confirmed jobs equates to about $8.9 million in unemployment benefits that we saved. That is based on a $27,040 per person, which we got through the employment department. We also, within that, we have 13 people. We had over 10,000 interactions with that 328 people to help them get those jobs, help produce the resumes, interviewing skills, find out what their qualifications were. J9 also helps all components, all service members from all different branches of service. We had over 19,000 interactions within that fiscal year, and more impressive, over 58,000 interactions with family members.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Carrie.
For the record, my name is Carrie Froelich, and I'm the Family Assistance Coordinator for Oregon. So I manage 10 sites throughout Oregon, and we assist all service members and families, regardless of branch or component. And as Jennifer said, on a yearly basis, we have about 58,000 interactions with service members and families. And of those, approximately 2,000 cases, which require a lot of follow-up and work with these families. A couple of our top issues that we get with these service members and families are employment issues. They're looking for jobs. We get some service members maybe looking for some small business loans to be able to get up and get started with a business of their own. And the other issue that we run into a lot is service members trying to use their GI benefits and not having help getting through the paperwork. So, you know, funding some positions to help these service members go through the rigorous process of using their GI benefits could certainly help a lot. So.
Great, thank you. And that's really, you know, I mean, there's a lot of nonprofits out there that would benefit from this as well, and I'm sure that they will. But there's also accessing the dollars and trying to get to those federal dollars and taking folks off state assistance and getting them into the federal benefits. So good for you, and thanks for your work. I really appreciate that. Any questions of this panel?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to close saying that we had over 1,000 interactions last year just with family members. 128 of those were really serious that these folks dealt with on a serious, that we consider serious. If this program, if the feds do change their funding and we have to, then there isn't any funding and we lose these folks, it's about a $1.3 million cost per year to operate that. The feds are paying now.
And oddly enough, the 1.3 is roughly what the raffle ticket would bring in. Thank you.
I didn't want to mention that again.
There's a lot of ways to spend $1 million. I just haven't ever had $1 million to worry about it. So thank you very much.
Last point is $26 million is my entire general fund budget for the department.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. Next up, we'll bring up Tyler Marriott, Ken Kraft, and PJ Mulcahy. And on deck will be Mike Sullivan, Deanna Dalton, and Ryan Fisher. Thank you for being here, gentlemen. Start in whatever order you like. And
hi. Chairman Matthews and everyone else there, good afternoon. My name is... Ken Kraft. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here today, and thanks for your service. As a Vietnam veteran said, and sir, growing up as a military, you folks were my heroes. So you're all welcome at our VFW post, and we thank you for your service.
Mr.
Welcome
Chair, home. I'd just like to remind you, just do me one favor, don't say we're one of the old guys.
Just speak loud.
Yeah. Last night I had the opportunity to speak with the 2010-2011 National Veterans of Foreign War National Commander and our incoming State Commander on this issue. We're strongly in favor of both of these bills coming up. In my travels around the state, I actually do go to all four corners. And I'll tell you a small story about a young lady from New York City who deployed as a reservist. And she actually came back into Oregon to do this reserve time. After her deployment, she came back to a small town of Enterprise, Oregon. If you've ever been there, it's a very small town. The services outside of the Portland and I-5 corridor are different around the state. She has a military sexual trauma. The acronym is MST. She actually went to get help, and some of the folks helping up there did not understand the services she was looking for. Two suicide attempts later, I bumped into her, and we got her pointed down to some of the folks in some of the areas down here she can go to. Services are very different for the veterans coming home in different parts of this state. There's a Vietnam Navy veteran in Florence, Walport area, who has a great big sign out there, "No one you know lives here." We talked to this gentleman through time, and he went through a Roseburg counseling and PTSD group, and now he actually has removed a sign, and he's trying to come back into society. You can hear small stories from individuals all around this state. What I would say is, General Caldwell just spoke, but the Oregon National Guard has been a very deployed unit in its airmen and soldiers coming in out of here, and you can't say enough good about the jobs they have done, from driving the convoys down there to flying the missions to you name it. But they are one part. There's also the reserve components. There's the Coast Guard components, and there is the veterans from all eras here as well. We see these in the 15 seconds. That was a quick 3 minutes. So I'm going to tell you one thing. This is numbers on the ground. The Veterans of Foreign Wars is doing last year with $50 million in veteran service officer claims. That's with one officer and a secretary. That's on a good year. On the average year, it's $30 to $35 million. These are real funds, real numbers, and this money would greatly go to help those folks. Thank you for the time here today.
Thank you, and thanks for your service. And you'll notice a short 3 minutes, but a long 15 seconds. So thank you. Next up, if you will.
For the record, my name is Tyler Marriott. I'm past state commander for VFW for the state of Oregon. I'm going to paint my picture with a very pointed modeler's paintbrush, not great big broad strokes. What I saw when I became junior vice in 2008, it was an issue that I think I'd heard about, but I wasn't really sure. And then as I went through junior vice, senior vice, and then state commander, I saw it very pointedly. And what that is our VSO. And like Ken says, I started seeing the reports, and we got $4 to $5 million a month from our VSO. It's one individual, a halftime individual, and a secretary. That's $4 to $5 million a month in resolutions, in settlements, not in proposed claims. That's $4 to $5 million that comes back into this state, because I doubt anybody's saving it. It's all being spent here. And whatever money the state can go to that VSO, that our veteran service officer, what, $60,000? He's paying his own retirement because we don't have enough money to support it. We're selling calendars this year for $20 a piece on a raffle type basis in order to try to get enough money to fund our VSO so that we can get these veterans the help that the VA requires. Personally, I've been turned down twice because I don't know how to go through the system. I've had assumptive Agent Orange cancer. It doesn't count. I have PTSD. It doesn't count because I don't know how to go through the system. I was so busy with state commander, I didn't have time to try the system. I finally tried it with my mother and the survival spouse. It took me 2.5 years to finally get through it, but I had an advocate. That's what we need, is money for the VSOs to help get these guys through the system so they can get what the VA is willing to pay. You just have to prove that you have all the stuff in line, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Patrick Mulcahy. I live in Aloha, Oregon. I served 50 years ago as a young man, 21 years old. I'm familiar with the lottery. That's how I got involved with the military. I got my number drawn.
I know.
You might laugh about that, but I don't think it's very.
Oh, I know.
I chose to go in the Air Force rather than my friends here that did fight. And thanks, guys. And I'm here today. I'm not sure. Tina asked me to come by today, and I sat at home last night thinking, why would I be here today? Then I got to discover, you know why I'm here? I'm going to stand up for these guys that did do the fighting. Okay? I served a year overseas, and I worked around nuclear weapons. And for 1 year, I worked around radiation fallout from accidents. I worked right in live radiation. I've never had a disability, never had to have a dime's worth of work, and I appreciate you taking care of these guys. God helped me through that. I was fortunate, and I know that when I see these friends tell their stories, it breaks my heart. This uniform, there's people inside of it. We have feelings just like you do. And as far as I could thank for the comments earlier about thanking us, I feel we've been spit on for since day one. It's getting worse. This lottery thing you're doing, it's going to be hopefully it goes through, but it's not going to be enough. This state is in economic trouble with our schools, with everything else going on. We need to really be sincere in our efforts, not have the meetings and just decide if we're going to take care of one another. When we're not begging, we can make it ourselves, and we will. You may not understand that, but we do survive, and we always will. But we need a little support. The lottery isn't going to be enough. I don't believe in the long run. I read in the paper last night that the Air Force just spent $1.2 trillion on developing a plane that's never fought a battle. Washington needs to be contacted. I don't know if you got any contacts in Washington. This waste of spending is wrong. We need to take care of these fellows behind me and the ladies behind me. We don't need $1.2 trillion airplanes. We don't. And this is a modern day of warfare has changed. Today we're looking at a country called North Korea on the verge of launching nuclear weapons at South Korea and even threatening us. The wars aren't over. We're going to have people coming and going from now on forever until God says, hey, we've had enough. And that's my comments. That's how I feel. I feel that we need to support my friends. I'll be fine. I'll do all I can to do it. And when you cast that vote, whoever you might be, don't forget we serve because you've got your position in politics today. Thank you.
And, sir, I'd remind you that several of us served as well, so thank you.
Beg your pardon?
I said several of us served as well, so thank you. I appreciate
that.
Thank you,
fellas. Thanks, Lou.
Appreciate your service. And with that, are there questions of the committee? Thank you very much. Thanks. Next panel, please.
Thanks a lot.
Mike Sullivan, Deanna Dalton, and Ryan Fisher. And on deck will be Lisa Hersheim, Travis Hersheim, and Sherry Stock. And thank you, everybody, for recognizing and respecting the three-minute time limit. We hate to do that to you, but if we don't get out of the committee room on time, and bad things can happen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Matthews and members of the committee. This is my first time testifying, so I just want to be patient with me. It's an honor to testify today before you, and I want to thank each of you for hearing me and our plea on behalf of veterans services statewide. I want to thank the veterans behind me. Thank you very much for coming out for the weather.
Deanna, did you say your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Deanna Dalton.
Shame on you. I'm going to send you out. No, Deanna, okay.
Yeah,
thank you, Deanna.
Sorry, for the record, my name is Deanna Dalton. That was next. and I'm here representing 211 Info as our military liaison. I am also here as a veteran who served 8 years in the U.S. Army, and I am also here representing my family who holds multiple generations of veterans that access services. I'm here to talk about HJR 29. And the need for funding for social service programs aimed at veterans. 211, as you probably know, connects people to health and community resources. Our new military program is aiming to ensure that our database is inclusive for the veterans that are statewide and the service members that are coming home. Since January 1st of this year, 211 Info has fielded 532 calls by citizens of Oregon that identified as having served in the military or a dependent of someone who did. Of these 532 calls, 453 were basic direct service need assistance. This includes utility assistance. This is rent assistance, food pantries, gas vouchers, transportation, and dental care. This number begins to highlight a need for basic social service needs for veterans. We have mental health and reintegration programs that need to be funded, but as I'm doing needs assessment, being at 211 Info for the last 2 months, I've seen a glaring disparity for basic needs for veterans. As I perform outreach for our new military program, I've received nothing but welcoming support. However, there are many programs that are apprehensive to be amplified in our database because their funding is so low, but the need from veterans is so great, they're afraid to be overwhelmed and overloaded and then lose the food boxes from the local church that is delivering every single week. I am personally being contacted daily by service providers who are overwhelmed and simply cannot find these basic need services for the veterans in their community. And I have to tell them that there aren't any. I have one Washington advocate who is overwhelmed, and he's a Marine himself, wanting to know how to help rural veterans with transportation issues, with isolation and mental health. Our veterans shoulder a lot, and we need to make sure that there are services available. 211 supports veterans and the programs here that would be aided by this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nolan. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Fisher, and I'm here today on behalf of the Community Action Partnership of Oregon, which is a statewide association of community action agencies, and the Oregon Housing Authorities, which is a statewide association of housing authorities. I'm one of those folks who's here in the building every day, and I've submitted written testimony, so I will be extremely brief today. But we wanted to be sure to stand up and thank the good representative for bringing this idea forward. Clearly, you have heard from others today, more eloquent than myself, about the need that we have in this state. We've got to make sure that veterans who have served our countries have their basic needs met so that they can address whatever barriers they have towards success. And if we don't have the resources, we can't get that job done. I'll leave you with one statistic to think about that I think about almost every night, which is that between the ages of 18 and 30, you are more than twice as likely to be homeless if you have served your country than if you have not. That is just not right. And I am grateful to this committee for all of the work that you're doing. And I appreciate you taking this issue up today.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate all the work you're doing. Of course, our housing bill for veterans is still rolling and got a lot of momentum. And all your fine work with the coalition and what you've done on that is just phenomenal. So we expect to get that out and have it break loose real soon. So thank you. Mike.
Good afternoon, Chairman Matthews and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the political director in Oregon for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. That's about 2 minutes there, I think. AWPPW and myself wholeheartedly support using lottery dollars to support veterans. There are so many needs for the veterans. Particularly, health care is the one that really comes out most loud for us. We ask the best for those who represent us in the field of war. We, as citizens, in return, have to do the best for them. Looking at who sponsored or who didn't sponsor this bill, 41 representatives and 19 senators, it proves what former chair of this committee, Donna Nelson, said, that Veterans Affairs is not partisan. You know, it all runs the same for the veterans committee, like this committee and all the ones before you. Let us all hope that the other states pick up on the efforts of House Joint Memorial 29 and do similar legislation. We could then possibly, and I say possibly, get the attention of the federal government to do something. It's really their charge, not the states, to take care of the veterans, to go fight in behalf of the country, not the states. Again, I applaud, you know, this effort, and it is really needed. And I hope there's a windfall of funds to come from it, but for the veterans and their families. But I caution everyone to remember what Mac McDonald, who came here faithfully and always testified to, that a veteran is a veteran, regardless of when or where or how. And there's ones that are young guys, like Representative Escobar and myself, and then there's really young people, and there'll be even younger ones to come, because sure as it rains in Oregon, there'll be another war. And I thank you for the opportunity, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panel? Yes, Representative Escobar.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I wanted to thank you, Mike. I feel much better now.
Because you understand the acronym behind his...
About the young part.
Yes, exactly. Thank you all very much. Thanks for your service, and thanks for what you're doing for our veterans. And we have Lisa Hersheim, Travis Hersheim, and Sherry Stock, please. And on deck, we'll have Theda Tani and Christopher Plummer. Thank you, and welcome to the Capitol, and whatever order you'd like to go in would be...
I'm the boss.
You're the boss.
Hi, my name is Lisa Hersheim. I have three things I would like to say. I am a U.S. Army veteran. I married my husband while I was in the Army. We have six children. I will say that there are three things that I think could benefit from this money if it comes to pass. First of all, our children. I am so proud of our children for growing up the children of soldiers. It was so very difficult for his older children to have their father deployed so much. And they lived in Oregon where their mother, their biological mother, did not know how to access help for those girls. Then my children came. And my son, while he was deployed in Iraq, had so many issues that could have been addressed. I didn't know. Even as a soldier, I did not know there was help for him. There needs to be outreach. The people like me, poor little farm girl from West Virginia, needs to know that there are help for families. Second of all, I would like to say that because of my husband's deployment and his injury, he was very unemployable for quite a while. That is very, very difficult on a family. And I think because he figured out the system, he went to work for Jack as his assistant as the VSO. He knew the system. We were able to navigate that system somewhat better than other people. However, it was very difficult. This money will help that greatly. Third, I am a hospice nurse with a local hospice. I work for a company that I am not here representing right now, but the company was started by veterans for veterans. That's all they served for a long time. And end-of-life care for a combat veteran is very, very different than end-of-life care for a regular person. And I will tell you right now, walking into the homes of a person that's at the end of their life that has food insecurities, who doesn't know how they're going to pay their heating bill, who doesn't have a way to buy a cord of wood even for the wood stove, and then for our company, who is Medicare funded, to not have the money to give them that money, but say, well, let me refer you to this source. And then that source says, well, let me refer you to this source. Well, maybe these people can help, because nobody has any money. That is a travesty. These people are heroes. They served our country honorably. They deserve to have their end-of-life needs met beyond what Medicare pays for. That's all.
Thank you for that. And will you allow your husband to testify as well?
I will.
Thank you. I know how it rolls. Same thing in my house.
Yep. My name is Travis Hersheim. Served almost 15 years with the Army. I was one of the halftime people that were mentioned earlier working for the VFW. I've been through... Excuse me. I've lost three jobs. When I came home in 04, there really wasn't anything. Like Lisa said, we kind of figured things out as we went. And working with the VFW, helping veterans out. Like it's been said, I heard quite often, there's no money. And I don't want that to be the standard answer. It shouldn't be. There's a lot of veterans out there that... you know, they don't know how the system works. They don't know how to ask for help. And there needs to be the resources and the people available so that when somebody comes forward and does ask for help, it's not, we don't have the money, we don't have the resources. It will be, come on in, sit down, let's get this done. And this is an opportunity to make that a reality. And thank you guys.
Thank you. Thank you both for your service, and thanks for your courage and testimony, and I appreciate it very much. And you know, just as an alarming statistic, 27% of our veterans are accessing benefits in Oregon right now. That's it. And so part of the driving cost behind this is really how do we get to the dollars that are there for our veterans, for our families, for their spouses, for their kids, so that we can, you know, help reintegration take place, so that your service becomes that event in your life, and then your life continues beyond that. And thank you so much. And with that, if you will, please.
Chair Matthews and committee members, my name is Sherry Stock. I'm the Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of Oregon, and I want to give you an overview of what a nonprofit does that's helping veterans. I am also the spouse of a retired military, and have been military my whole life, watching what he does, getting education while he's gone. Anyway, BIAOR, we get about 8,000 calls a year, about 12,000 emails, and about 25% of those are from veterans or their family members. We're a one-person office, 100% nonprofit. We don't have any mother money coming in but what I make. The Alec Geese had the distinction of being the first traumatic brain injury survivor from Iraq, and he is Representative Boone's constituent. And the VA in Palo Alto contacted me because they would not release him to the VA in Oregon. I hope none of those people are here. They have such a great reputation. The VA wouldn't even send him there. Who do I refer to? I get these calls. I refer to Mitch Sparks at the Oregon VA. He's an incredible person, and he knows how to get things done. I refer to Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. They're a great group, and they don't know the word no. And I've had somebody in Hermiston that the family couldn't help this individual. They drove there, two people, and helped him. They also went to Klamath Falls for me to help somebody out in Klamath Falls. The VFW, I had someone, I'm from Malala, and I had someone from Malala that had a brain injury, couldn't return to work after returning home, had a broken back, brain injury, broken legs, broken collarbone, and the VA in their infinite wisdom didn't think he needed help. So the VFW in Malala was able to get him in touch with the National. They paid his rent for 3 months because they were losing their home at Christmas time. And they also paid for him to be go to the pool for a year for physical therapy because the VA didn't think he needed physical therapy. I also had someone down in Medford who was at the VA hospital. They said he was faking because he had a traumatic brain injury with severe seizure disorder. And they were kicking him out of the hospital Monday morning. So I didn't have anyone to call, so I called the newspapers, and it made front page headlines on Sunday in Medford, and the VA changed their mind and did not kick him out on Monday morning. And one of the number one problems with returning to work with TBI or PTSD is you can't hold a job. And so one of the issues of people that can't hold a job is there's not enough resources, there's not enough cognitive rehab to help them get back on their feet. And nonprofits like me, and we are hundreds of them, are here to help and are trying to help. Thank you.
Thank you for your service to veterans, and thank you again for being in the building. Are there any questions for the panel? Yes, Representative.
I don't have any questions. I'd just like to share with you, and you've been in the military for quite some time, and I think back of the stuff that we wasted in the military. We could more than pay for anything on the VA if we just cleaned up our act, if we allowed our squadrons and our units to retain money instead of have to spend it or lose it. That mentality is so archaic and so out of date that it's just unbelievable, because you could take that money, you could hold it over, and use it for an emergency, but more importantly, you could get a stability in your funding. And yet, the government hasn't figured that out. In maintenance support division, they were throwing capacitors and transistors overboard on the way home because they wanted brand new. You know, it's just a crying shame. The other crying shame is we're talking about a few bucks here, and we have a $60 billion plus budget in a biennium. Let's put that in perspective.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you again. Really appreciate your time and testimony today. Thank you so much. If we could please have Christopher Plummer and Theda Tawney please come forward.
I was looking for the actor.
And I'm going to... Oh, I see. Okay. Bill, you coming forward too?
Apparently. He's my escort.
I think he is.
There
we... Maybe not.
Looks like a young Christopher Plummer.
You want me to go first?
Okay. Hi.
Did I say something wrong? Everybody left.
My name is Theda Tawney, and I'm a Gold Star mother. My son, Ian Tawney, was killed in Afghanistan in 2010. And when he left, he had served also a tour in Iraq in 2007. He was on his second deployment. His wife was pregnant with their first child. And he told me when he left, he said, "Mom, even if Grandma dies, no matter what happens, I won't be able to come home. I'm a squad leader. My guys are counting on me. And I won't be able to come home." His grandma was in her 90s. And he said, "I really have a responsibility to them, and they're counting on me. And I know if he was here today, he would encourage you to raise whatever funds you can to take care of his fellow military people. A number of his classmates were in the Marine Corps and in the Army. Some of them have come back with PTSD, with a traumatic brain injury. The fellow in the incident when Ian died lost his arm. He wasn't from Oregon, but Ian was killed in an IED blast. And I just feel like there's such a bond among these military people that needs to be carried over into the society that we live in. And that we need to take care of them as much as they want to take care of each other. And I think the resources that are there just among the veterans themselves to care for one another if we have the funds to do it. So I thank you for hearing me today.
Ma'am, I want to ask you a very personal question, and I hope that you don't mind.
Not at all.
Ian's wife was pregnant at the time of his being killed in line of duty.
Yes.
Baby granddaughter?
Yes, little girl.
What's her name and how's
her
she doing?
Her name's Claire.
Claire?
Yeah.
Do you get to see Claire very often?
I do. We have a really wonderful relationship with our daughter-in-law, and she is probably the most gracious person I've ever known. She's done a beautiful job with Claire, and she moved to North Carolina to be near her mother, but we see them probably 3 or 4 times a year.
Well,
and so
thank you for being
happy.
Here, and please extend our deepest regret and, of course, most appreciation for your support and Ashley's support. Of Ian and his service to this great country.
Yes, he loved being a Marine, and he loved his buddies. You know, they really are a band of brothers, and we need to take care of them.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Sir?
Good afternoon. I'm former Lance Corporal Christopher Plummer of the United States Marine Corps. I'm pretty sure the last study that I read was 1 in 5 veterans come home with some sort of mental disability. Coming back just from Iraq-Afghanistan war, not talking about any of the other conflicts. I just read in the Oregonian that 3,001 people are backlogged in the VA right now for over a year. More than 13,000 claims in Oregon alone right now. Mental health is being picked up, or mental health needs to be picked up by the local community to protect the mental freedoms as the men and women that served have protected our freedoms. And I've been out since 2006, and I'm here to say that I had to appeal at least seven times, and three or four of those seven times was over a year for the backlog. And it wasn't until 2010, I got out in 2006, that I fully got my benefits. Luckily, I had had friends and people who cared about me, but I was almost homeless like three or four times. I also met a VSO who fought tooth and nail for me, and he got fired. Well, I don't know what the real reason is, but he got let go because he was helping too many people. With 18 suicide attempts per day for veterans, I think mental health is so much more important than some of these other things, and one of the most important steps to getting these veterans jobs, education, and home. If a veteran's hiding under a desk at his job, it's not going to really help him if he has one, just like the person before me said. So I'm not only here as a veteran, I'm here as a person that went through a mental health program that really helped me, and if I didn't have that, I'd probably be one of those 18 people. And I want to do that. I want to pay that forward to my fellow veterans and bring that mental paradigm, that mental health paradigm, through my business. And this bill would help businesses like mine fund, start up, and get going so that we can do stuff and help them. I'm working with the intent of changing the mental health treatment, not only that, but picking up in the community where the VA can't because they're backlogged and overbooked. The community needs to stand up, and we don't have any money to do it. I tried to open the nonprofit in 2010, didn't know much about business, but I knew I had heart. That's all I had. And I'm doing it again. And without things like this bill, the lottery bill, there's no money for the mental health to be taken care of. And like I said, jobs are great, education's great, learning how to write a resume is great, but when you're not mentally fit to take advantage of those benefits, they do nothing. And when the when the benefits are backlogged for years, then they don't really seem to be considered as benefits. Thank you.
Thank you for your service, and thanks for lending your voice and helping, you know, be out here on behalf of the younger veterans to let us know that, you know, there is exactly what we know, and that is a struggle with the reintegration, and we're well aware and working on them, and we can't do it without you. And again, thank you so much, and bless you both. Thank you.
Just a quick...
Representative Boone, I'm sorry.
Wait, yes, Mr. Ma'am. Plummer. What kind of business do you do? I was just thinking when you were saying that, as you said, you kind of alluded to a nonprofit, and I was just wondering if it's a kind of bridge service or...
I want to eventually get it into reintegration. I don't know really how to go about that, but I'll figure it out. And it's something that's not offered through the VA. It's something that's only really offered to the higher caste of social class, which is life coaching, because it costs so much. Mm. You've probably heard of retreats and stuff like that. And there needs to be veterans retreats for such things so that they can get the mental health that they need. And if I didn't have that, I had it without the military, but if I didn't have that, I would have been on a list of 18 for sure.
Yeah, follow-up?
Follow-up.
That's what I thought you were going to say. So I'm very intrigued by that, and it seems like that's an area that... because it's not direct mental health services requiring counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, but it's something to get help people find a focus on where they would be good, you know, in their life to move on. So, you know, maybe you can work with our veteran services. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who you've worked with so far, but I think that's a...
Tina's helped me a lot with getting in touch with people and finding things out, so I'm going to definitely keep in contact
well, good
with
luck.
Her. And
good luck, and with your name, you ought to just get meetings all the time. So,
I'll just sing and dance.
Sure. There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative. Then we have one more panel. Representative Escobel.
No, thank you. You mentioned that we had 3,000, I think you said, back order. Is that just in the state of Oregon?
This is the state of Oregon. I read it.
Because
today,
nationwide, I believe it was 300,000.
Yeah.
And I believe that's almost up to a million, and it's taking 2 to 4 years to get this processed. And yet the federal government sunk in, I want to say, 20 or 30 billion extra dollars for nothing so far.
for things that
because we're falling really farther behind. So I'm very concerned about what we're doing with the federal VA.
I appreciate that. Thank you again for your testimony, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next up, and these are the last folks signed up on the day, Maria and Michael Brennan.
With the cute baby.
And we have somebody else with Michael and Maria.
Representative Fagan, I see a little competition. She's too
yes.
cute.
Glad to have her.
Starting early.
Wonderful. Well, if you would just identify yourselves for the record, and you may begin. We are a little on a time crunch, so we're going to tell people about 3 minutes per testimony. Thank you.
My name's Maria Brennan.
I'm Mike Brennan. We're the parents of Matthew Brennan. He was a soldier in the 41st Brigade that came back from Iraq in 2010. And he committed suicide because of PTSD.
When he got back, not a month, he tried to commit. And the VA really hit it really well for us, so they really never
communicated
with us. So they just highly medicated him and put him back out in the regular society. And
the reintegration after returning from Iraq was subpar at best, and we really need to focus on doing something more for all soldiers returning from the conflicts overseas or wherever they may be that are dealing with any type of hardships.
Yeah.
Myself, I've served over 28 years in the military, and today I see the mental health clinic at the VA, and my appointments are spread out almost 3 weeks at a time. So the last person that was up here that talked to you guys, there is enough help out there to get these guys the help that's needed. And as we know, the average suicide rate for a U.S. soldier is anywhere from 18 to 26 years of age. And it's pretty harsh.
He passed away on July 16th of 2011. He was flagged as a high-risk suicide, but still running around out there. So it just shows you that and they didn't have enough room for him, they said. They didn't have any place to go to put him. That's what they told us. And it was about money. It was all about money.
Yeah, it was about who could get him on active orders after coming back from a year in the desert to facilitate him in White City for the intensive drug rehab / PTSD rehab to get him going in the right direction again. And nobody could do it. Oregon National Guard wouldn't step up and activate him on 30 days of, you know, Title 10 orders. You know, the VA didn't want to flip the bill for outsourcing something, but in return, the VA is getting a hell of a lot of money from our federal government to fund these people who are returning from war. You know, so there's a lot going on. My wife and I, after Matt's return,
created a foundation.
And after he passed away, we got a hold of his VA medical records through the Freedom of Information Act, learned what was going on really inside our son, and my wife and her friends created a foundation to help soldiers coming back from war that...
awareness and resources out there.
Yeah, to try to help others, because a lot of these guys my son served with are all heroin addicts now, or meth addicts, to try to take away the pain that... You go through a lot of different hardships, but comes from war, you know? It's an ugly thing.
Yes, sir.
So whatever the bill that you guys were here for today is for about the best reason in the world, to help a fellow American, a soldier, a citizen of the state of Oregon, a son, a daughter, a husband, a wife, a friend.
And these bills or the resolution truly would be, in one case, about us taking action to access more dollars. The other is about giving Oregonians a choice whether or not they would like us to access more dollars on behalf of our veterans. And and I'm a firm believer that they do. And I just, you know, words cannot express. I won't even try. All I can say is, you know, I appreciate your service, your son's service. It's very unfortunate that this was the end. We've had powerful testimony in the past about returning veterans and the suicide rate, the rate of which folks are taking their own lives rather than, you know, successfully completing reintegration. They just simply can't. It just overwhelms them, and it's just unfortunate and so sad. When I look at what was certainly and is Matt's little sister.
Seven brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So he comes from a very loving, big family, and so, like I said, what the war affected him changed his life. He said he should have died there. He would have been more honored. So, and I knew that he didn't come home the same. So I knew we had problems. And when he went to the VA, it just seemed like he dreaded it. It was like pulling teeth. He said, they're not going to help me. They're not going to understand what I'm going through. And it was just one after another. And my husband and I were like blank. We had no idea what we were, you know, what was ahead for us. And if there was only just more resources and more to know about, or if the VA was, you know, more open to communicating, or they would have locked him up, put him away and helped him out when he needed help, it would have been.
So. Thank you. I assure you, your testimony today, and I know it's difficult, but your words are not falling on deaf ears. This is a committee supportive of what we're trying to accomplish, and we can't do it without the voice coming from outside the building, coming into the building. And again, I applaud you for that, and thanks for your courage and your testimony today.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say, too, I'm sorry for your loss. And if it is any consolation to you, we have a new director, and our old director served for 40-some years, and he has retired now, but our new director, Cameron Smith, he was in the back. He went three tours in Iraq, and so I think it's good to have him in that position because he understands what it was like, you know, and so he'll have a lot of knowledge, just inside knowledge. So we're trying really hard in our guard to make reintegration work for people. We've stretched it out to 90 days instead of, what did they call it, death by PowerPoint in the 3 days when you get back. That you just want to get back to your family. And so all those things in the PowerPoints that tell you what's available out there just probably goes right through.
Plus, you take a look at a National Guard member compared to an active duty soldier. Reintegration is night and day, you know. You know, National Guard, you bring them back, you wind them up for 90 days, and you bring them back and wind them down for less than 30, you know. Active duty, you're always wound up.
Yeah.
Around the clock, 365, you're sleeping with guys, you're hanging out, you're drinking, whatever you're doing, you're a team, and when you come back with the guard, you're not a team. Everybody's broken up, and that's where your problems happen. And that's why getting programs together for the guys is so important to keep the unity as one.
Thank you for that, and thanks for making that point.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Representative Esquivel?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. When you mentioned the VA, are we talking about the federal or the state? Because I don't know whether the state would play much of a role here as the federal.
I see the federals. I go to Pill Hill.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
Oh, I use those. ODVA handles my... Yeah. I'm already 60% service connected, and it's climbing pretty rapidly. But, you know, ODVA's been really good.
Yeah.
Good job for my wife and I and my family on my case. And I've been pretty fortunate. It's been only about 15 or 16 years on my claim, so.
Yeah, former Director Willis was just a gem.
Yeah, and what I understand, I'm reading my son's records, he was 30% disabled, PTSD from service connection, and they moved really fast with him, but at the end of the day, the VA doesn't have the manpower to even facilitate what's really happening. It's an epidemic that's going to just get worse if we don't get on top of it fast.
Well, we are... very much aware of it. In fact, I think every one of us, this committee stays on our mind, throughout the interim and day in and day out about what can we do for veterans and how can we make sure that they're not forgotten and their needs aren't displaced.
Right.
Thank you so much again for your testimony today, and I really appreciate that. Thank you for coming.
Thanks.
And that is that concludes everyone who has signed up today to testify on House Bill 2086 or House Joint Resolution 29. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I just, since I started this, I want to just kind of wrap it up a little bit. You know, we asked organizations to get here, and of course, short notice, but you got to see a smattering, I think, colleagues, of folks and the need that they identified today. One of the organizations we asked to come down, a group that was trying to get kind of started by veterans, for veterans, for young veterans, couldn't be here. He himself kind of had a break, has a young wife, pregnant. Here's a guy who's trying to help other veterans, and he himself ended up being the one who needed help. I think that's important to know that a lot of these groups really are by veteran, for veterans, but the toll of carrying the weight of this on a veteran who's already served and who's also experienced this and then put the weight on their shoulder to try to do this is just compounds some of the problems when we're just relying on veterans to take care of each other. I also want to say, she didn't come up to testify, but Jennifer Wagner, my staff, her husband and my husband served in Iraq together. Her husband is looking to be deployed potentially again with the 41st. She takes good care of me when we're down here, and that'll be a sacrifice for her if her husband leaves again and their three children. And the last little piece I'll leave, I was out gathering signatures last week when we had our in-district day out at the DMV in Gladstone, and old, a Vietnam veteran. So that Representative Escal doesn't bop me over the head. But a Vietnam veteran clearly had the look of a Vietnam veteran.
The old guys.
Did not look like he wanted
exactly.
to be...
Give me that.
Yeah, hit me with the gavel. Did not look like he wanted to be bothered with that. And so I just let him walk by, and I asked the next person, do you want to sign my petition to help veterans? This guy beelined back around, came back, and wanted to know what I was doing about veterans and why was I standing there, and was very clear with me that he's not happy about how we treat soldiers and how we don't take care of soldiers. Clear that, particularly for that generation of soldiers, a lot of distrust with the government. We're already starting to see that now with the next generation of soldiers. These bills are an opportunity, I think, for us to build trust with our veterans and to take care of them. And the most memorable piece of that conversation is he pops a button off of his leather jacket and hands it over to me, POW, MIA, and he says, you keep this for luck until that ballot passes. So I'm going to do that, and I just appreciate everybody who came out today and shared their stories.
I appreciate that, and I think for the committee members, what I'll say, and for those that stayed for the entire... It's the chair's mission to find a way to move something that has a chance to actually get passed. We heard earlier a laundry list of bills that we'd moved out of committee in past sessions, $4.5 million worth of things that never stood a chance to make it out of Ways and Means. It doesn't feel good to do work in this committee that doesn't go anywhere beyond that. And it's not helpful to our veterans to move bills to make a statement from this committee that's going to go nowhere beyond that. So I am saying that I assure you and ask you to put some faith in my abilities, and it'll be my mission to find something that will work. And it won't only work for this committee. It'll work bipartisan. It'll work across the aisle. There is some concerns about an appropriation of $50 million. And I'm going to tell you now, we are going to work towards a level that we can get to get support on, to get something that's a step forward for our veterans. Because in the end, I can tell you, I could ask for 50% of this fund, knowing it's going to fail, and I wouldn't feel good about that at all. I could run to the highest mountain and brag to everybody what I'm trying to accomplish at 50%, knowing I don't stand a chance. I want this committee to be successful. I want to send a strong message to our veterans outside the building that we are working hard in the institution. And to be honest, I don't believe our veterans should have to collect signatures, nor do I believe they should have to fund their own benefit. I believe that's what we're here to do. And so with that, I would like to have individual conversations with the committee to find out exactly what the level of comfort might be and what we could all support moving forward. And I'll be having those with both sides of leadership so that we can hopefully get a gain in this. Because I have left too many bills in committees to die that were good for veterans. And quite honestly, they deserve better. And with that, this committee is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.